Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
True Hauntings is a Frightfully Good production.
With hundreds of years of history, Yellowstone National Park is no stranger to ghost stories. From headless brides in the park's hotel to wandering dark shadows, carnivorous plants and bubbling mud pools, Yellowstone is no Disneyland.
The stunning beauty of Yellowstone hides the fact that you must watch where you walk, as you too could become a ghost of the park yourself. There are caves you can get lost in, bears that can eat you, and thermal pools that will cook you alive. There are so many ways to die here. Hi, I'm Renata.
And I'm Anne. And in this episode of the True Hauntings podcast, we look at the true stories of death in the park, as well as the mysterious ghost stories of the many souls that linger, and we'll test your nerve as night falls and the forest becomes still. So, make yourself a hot chocolate, pull up a camp chair, and turn down the lights and listen out for the howl of the occasional wolf and hoot of the night owl as we take you deep inside Yellowstone National Park.
Anne and Renata have been investigating paranormal occurrences for the past 20 years. They have been at the center of various unexplained phenomena and have witnessed countless ghostly experiences. The duo now turn to high-profile cases that have attracted the eyes of the world. Between the dimensions we see and the dimensions we don't, supernatural forces are at play. Evil lurks within the shadows of our homes and in the darkest corners of our minds. It follows us like a shadow. Forever. This is where nightmares become reality. This is True Hauntings.
Something strange is going on at Yellowstone National Park. I found this very strange journal when I was hiking in Yellowstone last summer. Normally, I wouldn't even bother to mention it, but when I found it just sitting off the edge of a walkway around the big hot springs, I was curious. It was one of those really classic leather-bound journals, and I love all those rustic styles. After picking it up, I looked around at the crowd of people roaming across the walkways, thinking maybe somebody had dropped it, but no one looked like they were looking for anything. I even shouted that I'd found it, hoping the owner would come for it, but after getting a few strange looks, I figured the owner was long gone. At this point, I was very curious as to what was in it, and I figured I might find some information to allow me to locate the owner, so I thumbed through it. What I found was shocking. Now, initially, I thought it was just a story, you know, kind of those creepypasta, the things that they have on Reddit. But as I continued to read, it was clear that this was not just a creepy story. Something is going on at Yellowstone, and I think everybody needs to know before it's too late. What I'm about to tell you may sound like flat-out insanity or someone trying to play a joke, but I swear this is real. After I read the entire journal, I was thinking the same thing. I thought it was just a story, then even tried to brush it off as a joke, but my curiosity got the better of me, so I looked into it. And I even spent the rest of my vacation investigating the information in this journal. I mean, if it was real, I had to know, or at least calm my fears and worries. What I found was far more terrifying than I'd ever imagined. But let's get back to the journal. It was written by a gift shop worker named Sarah, who worked in the Old Faithful Basin store. She wrote that she was very friendly and would often chat with the customers about their vacations and such. She was so well liked, apparently, that she often got repeat visits from customers, sometimes just before they'd leave or because they felt comfortable with her and she was honest. Whatever it was, Sarah was definitely not a wallflower by any means. She wrote that she began to notice visitors disappearing. She started to get concerned when visitors would ask about their missing relatives, although there were no missing persons listed in the daily bulletin. Apparently, the day after they would be chastised for breaking a park rule by a park ranger, they would mysteriously disappear. Sarah wrote that the visitors would tell her that they reported their friend or family member missing to the park rangers and a few hours later would be told that they were seen leaving the park. Yet the customers would often say they tried calling their missing companions but just couldn't get a hold of them. She tried to calm their fears by telling them that there was terrible cell service due to the mountains, but her worry started to grow as more and more people would go missing. Yet not a single one of them would show up on the missing reports. It was at this point when she started to look into this strange event. Sarah began offering to keep a lookout for the missing person and traded phone numbers with the frantic families. Now, I know what you're thinking. I looked into missing persons reports at Yellowstone, and none of the people listed missing in the journal are listed in the missing persons registry at the park. Not a single one of those people that she described is listed as missing in the park, yet the family swear up and down that they went missing in the park. I even asked myself when I called the Yellowstone Park Service claiming to be a journalist, and every time I mentioned one of the missing, and I mean every time, I was informed that that particular person was seen leaving the park. Clearly, there was more to this than the Park Service was willing to admit. I had decided to spend the rest of my summer vacation looking into this issue. Okay, so back to the journal. In the next section of the journal, Sarah said she started to look into these missing persons with a greater intensity, spending her evenings researching each individual, trying to find any connections or links between them. She started questioning a few park rangers, asking simple questions such as, "Have you heard about this person? Their family said they went missing from Campground A." And, "Did you happen to see this person actually leave the park?" After a couple of weeks of questioning the visitor disappearances, she came home to find a note pinned to her front door. When she read the note, she was shocked to find, "Stop looking. You wouldn't want to lose that precious job you love so much." This, however, only served to solidify her determination to investigate the disappearances. Clearly, this wasn't just a tourist lost in the miles of the park. Something sinister was actually going on. After a couple of weeks of investigating and finding no real leads, Sarah happened to overhear a couple of park rangers talking. Their hushed discussion seemed unusual, prompting her to decide to follow them at the end of her shift. As soon as her shift ended, with her mind almost entirely focused on the mystery, she didn't even notice when she almost slammed into the back of the same two rangers she overheard earlier, and after cheerfully saying something like, "Oh, I'm so sorry I didn't see you. I'll see you tomorrow. Have a great night," she shuffled away quickly in the direction of the parking lot as if to go to her car. The rangers seemed to ignore her presence as she continued down the path. Once she was sure they were not paying any attention to her, she ducked behind a tree and waited until they were almost out of sight before following them down the path. Being a gift shop employee, she was not used to the long hike, and after what seemed to her like miles, she began to become nervous as the sun was starting to set behind the mountains, and yet the rangers never stopped. Sarah began to question her determination as thoughts of bear and bison attacks began to slip into her mind, since she saw daily reports of visitors having encounters, but she pushed them away and steeled her resolve and continued her pursuit of the rangers. Hours later, she crept along the path as the half moon rose, casting an eerie glow in the darkness as she pursued the rangers. Sarah was starting to become convinced that the rangers were only checking the park after closing, and just as she started to turn around, she noticed a new light just over the rise. As she slipped from tree to tree, getting closer to her quarry, she began to notice the odour of sulphur and mixed with pine. She finally crested the rise and saw a cabin with an odd chimney in the centre. Anxiety filled her as she debated getting closer to the cabin in order to see what was going on inside, but fear won the day and she retreated. It took nearly 3 hours to return, almost getting lost several times along the way. Once she reached the parking lot, she immediately drove home without stopping, constantly checking her rearview mirror, worried she might be followed. Thankfully, she never saw anyone follow her, and her fear and anxiety began to subside. Once she reached home, she breathed a sigh of relief and started to think the entire event over in her mind. Sarah wrote how determined she was to still look into what was going on, and decided to use her day off to check out the cabin during the day. Apparently, she was so excited and nervous, she slept fitfully, but woke up even more determined to solve the mystery. She wrote that she felt she was living one of those mystery books she loved to read. The next morning, Sarah decided to skip her breakfast, instead opting for a few protein bars. She also made certain she was dressed appropriately for the long hike to the cabin. After driving to the store parking lot, she decided it might make the park ranger suspicious if they saw her car in the lot and not working, so she decided to park a bit further up the road off a small unmarked trail. She then hiked for several hours in the direction of the cabin, making sure she was alone and not seen by any park rangers. She didn't want to blow her chance to find out what was really going on. After almost 3 hours of hiking, Sarah was about to give up and panic started to set in, thinking she had gotten herself lost in the miles of the forest, when she finally crested a small rise and found the strange cabin again. The cabin was even more unusual in the day. It was roughly circular with a central chimney that still seemed to exhaust smoke that smelled awful. It was then that she sort of realized that it was not smoke but steam, and in a flash of understanding concluded that the cabin was built around a hot spring that wasn't listed on any of the park maps. The facade of the cabin was clearly the original, appearing to have been built at the turn of the century. The rest was definitely upgraded, looking no more than 10 years old. After spending the next hour watching every direction and closely watching the lodge for any movement, she finally decided to get closer and find out what was going on. Sarah quickly crept up to the building and looked into several windows just to be certain no one was around. After confirming that she was alone, she circled around to the main entrance. The door was unlocked, which surprised her. If this was Park Service property or even USGS, the building should be locked when no one was on site. She almost decided to leave at that moment, but her curiosity got the best of her and she pressed on. She swiftly opened the door and quickly closed behind her while tiptoeing down the entranceway. There was a room on the right and on the left before the main doors into the room surrounding the spring. She chose the room on the right, hoping to find some sort of information relating to the building. Once she opened the door, she was shocked to see neatly folded stacks of clothing with a pair of shoes on top and the occasional hat, backpack or purse. Many of the piles had a camera as well. It was done so well and so carefully, as if lovingly prepared. The image was shocking, reminding her of an old horror story where the killer has a shrine of their victims. Sarah's heart started beating faster, and her breath caught in her throat as she looked around the room. There were dozens of these neat stacks, maybe even 50. As she looked closer, she noticed that the further down the line, the clothing became more dated. The rows ending in clothes from the turn of the century. It was clear something sinister was going on. Frantically, she began to search the clothing for any kind of identification. And yet, every single stack held nothing. Even the cameras had no film or memory cards. She concluded that any identifying information was deliberately removed. Suddenly, a large bang echoed down the hall. Her heart jumped to her throat as she frantically looked around. Fearing that she might be caught, she bolted down the hall to the doors into the spring room. The moment she entered, a wall of oppressive heat overwhelmed her, and she nearly started to cough on the fumes of sulfur. Stifling a cough and a gag, she stumbled around, desperately searching for a place to hide. As she scanned the area, she saw a large path that led to the center of the pool. At the end, a large altar. In a stroke of luck, she noted a large enough space beneath the altar where she could hide. Quickly, she wedged herself into the recess and waited. Sarah wrote that she waited for only a few short minutes before she heard voices and footsteps. As sweat began to drip into her eyes, she could hear the pleading of a young girl. "I swear I won't ever jump the fence again. Just let me go. I promise I won't ever break another rule. I don't want to get in trouble." It was only maybe a minute when the pleading suddenly switched to a short shriek and desperate cries. "Please, no! I won't ever come back. I won't tell anyone. Please, please, please." While the girl was begging for what seemed to be her life, Sarah started to notice a calm murmur of many voices. She wrote that she could hear what seemed like a prayer or a chant, but she could not make out any of the words. As she strained to hear what was being said over the girl sobbing, suddenly the chant stopped, and after only a few heartbeats later, a loud, blood-curdling scream that was quickly cut off following a splash. Sarah wrote that she was in a near panic attack. She had no idea what was going on, but she thought she had stumbled into a satanic cult murdering people. That thought was quickly extinguished when she felt a deep rumble, and then the oppressive heat got worse. A sudden thought that she would be steamed like a clam flashed through her mind, and then a disgusting odour became far more apparent. This was more than just the smell of sulphur, which she had become used to. It was like 1,000 bodies were rotting in fecal matter mixed with the smell of sulphur. Her stomach roiled and she choked back bile. Out of nowhere, a deafening roar filled the enclosed room that ended as quickly as it started. Sarah wrote she had no way of knowing if she would be caught, so she fought to remain absolutely silent. Seconds ticked by. In only a few short minutes, the smell retreated and the heat began to drop. She could now breathe more comfortably, but it still had the nausea feeling, and it was like a sauna. It was at that moment that the group began to chant anew. This was surprisingly brief, and once it was complete, she could hear the footsteps of the cult retreat. Sarah was concerned that if she got up too soon, she would be caught, so she waited for many, many long minutes. After nearly 30 minutes had passed without a single sound, Sarah slipped out of the crevice and quickly looked around. There was no one around her, and she then instinctively looked into the pool. It was just the same as it was when she arrived. Taking no chances, she quickly gathered her wits and bolted from the building. Exiting the cabin, the mountain air rapidly cooled the sweat that had drenched her clothing. At this point, she was running on autopilot, sprinting her way back out of the woods towards her car, her mind in shock. She was unsure what she had just heard and what the hell she had smelled. Maybe it was actually hell. She reached her car in record time, less than a third of the time it took to reach the cabin. Her body shaking, she jumped into her car and skidded out of the trail onto the road and back in the direction of her house. There is more to come. I will post more from her journal in a couple of days. I need to look into this more. Something is going on.
Well, after that epic story, Anne, we do not have time to have a chit-chat. We need to get on with this.
But you're saying it was a story. It's true, surely.
Well.
It came from Reddit.
It was good.
I loved it.
I want to know more. I want to know what happened.
It was posted 4 years ago by someone called use_beyond5150. So I thought it was just, it was really long, but it was such a good story. I had to do it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, over to you.
Well, Yellowstone was established as the world's first national park by an act of Congress and signed into law on March the 1st, 1872, by Ulysses S. Grant, who was president, and it became the first national park in the world. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, the park is located primarily in the U.S. states of Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho, and spans an area of 2.2 million acres.
Oh, that's...
that's a big park.
That's big, even by Australian standards.
Now, the park's name, Yellowstone, is derived from the Yellowstone River, which runs through the park. And the river itself got its name from the Native American name Mitsi-Adazi.
That was beautiful.
I apologize. And that translates into rock yellow
river. Paper scissors?
River.
Oh, okay.
Rock yellow river. And this name was given because of the yellow rock cliffs along the Yellowstone River.
Oh, who would have thunk?
Now, in reality, of course, hunter-gatherers have been interacting with Yellowstone for at least the past 11,000 years. And these early indigenous people discovered, they explored, they hunted and mined the Yellowstone region long before the arrival of the whiteys, the Euro-American settlers. Now, there was a geologist named Ferdinand Hayden, who directed the very first scientific exploration of Yellowstone in 1871. And he really led to the founding of the first national park the next year, or making Yellowstone the first national park in the world. So he had a number of noteworthy achievements in science and conservation, but he was a bit of a bastard of a person. And he had very, very terrible views of Indigenous people. And he made a lot of very shameful statements. Naughty Ferdinand.
Bad Ferdinand.
And he advocated that the Indigenous people should be just made into farmers. And if they didn't comply with federal dictations of, you know, what they should be doing or what they're allowed to do, they should be exterminated. So the creation.
Ferdinand should have been exterminated.
Yeah, the creation of Yellowstone National Park itself was an act of exclusion, as Indigenous people in the region were relocated from their home areas.
I mean, looking back retrospectively, we're going, you freaking idiots, what the hell do you think you're doing?
Yeah.
And the privilege. Honestly, the privilege there. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we found this place. Hmm. Yeah. No,
it's ours now.
Yeah.
You can all go away. You can go find somewhere else to live.
Yeah, go away. Take your things and go.
I think they'd take umbrage if somebody did that to them.
Mm. Oh, there'd be a war.
Oh, fancy that.
So there are, and I won't go into that, but I did honestly want to mention that part of the history of Yellowstone, which is not a nice history, obviously. It's a terrible history, but it is part of what did happen. And
it's part of the layers of the foundation of
many indigenous tribes were displaced with the sort of creation of the national park. The history of Yellowstone, though, is marked with significant milestones. One of the park's most famous features is its geothermal wonders, including all the hot springs and is it geysers?
Geyser. I like the old geyser, actually. Old Faithful. Good old Faithful.
And Old Faithful obviously is.
I'd like to see Old Faithful blow.
Yeah.
That sounded really wrong.
It's actually, the whole place is actually like a volcano. It can kind of erupt and, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. We've got some friends that have visited volcanoes and like to walk around the edges of it. And I'm watching what's going on in Iceland at the moment. And people's houses are just going up in flames and sinking into the ground. And that's terrifying.
Yeah. And not too many years ago, there was an occurrence just off Australia where a group, it was near New Zealand,
cruisers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Went to a little island where there was all of this sort of stuff going on, and you know, part of the island erupted while one of the tour companies was still on the island, and it was horrifying.
Yeah.
Horrifying. So, yeah.
All families involved. Wow.
Now, Yellowstone is renowned for being the site of successful wolf reintroduction efforts in the 1990s, which helped to restore balance to the park's ecosystem.
And if they'd left the indigenous people there, that wouldn't have been a problem.
Yes, yes. And the park has faced challenges over the years, including wildfires and impacts of increased visitation. But ongoing efforts are in place to preserve and protect its unique and natural beauty. And that's all I'm going to say on that, because the whole history of the place is this interweaving of so many stories and bits and pieces that you would need another hour or so. And I wanted to sort of get into...
And I've hogged most of the time.
The deaths, the real deaths that have occurred. So I'm going to sort of head into that, because maybe our listeners will find that interesting. And last year was the 150th anniversary of Yellowstone. And you can actually download a map which shows you the scaldings, maulings and murders of Yellowstone.
What was that title again?
Scaldings, Maulings and Murders. And it's exclusively from Cowboy State Daily. So I'm going to go into a little bit of information here. I hope you enjoy this. Onlookers no doubt watched in horror in July 1981 as 24-year-old David Kirwan dove headfirst into the boiling Celestine Pool at Yellowstone in July 1981. Kirwan had been chasing after his friend's Great Dane Moosey, who had escaped from the back of the pickup truck and jumped into the scalding hot spring, estimated to be about 200 degrees Fahrenheit. It didn't take long for Kirwan to realise his mistake. Within seconds, he popped out of the boiling water and attempted to pull the dog to shore. Kirwan made it. The dog didn't. Kirwan's friend received third-degree burns on his feet as he helped pull Kirwan's badly burned body onto the rock shelf. Kirwan managed to stand up before staggering backwards. His buddy and another onlooker led him toward the parking lot for help. "Well, that was stupid. How bad am I?" Kirwan reportedly asked his friend as he stumbled onto the boardwalk. Kirwan's eyes were totally white.
Oh, God.
As if blind, and his badly burned skin had already begun peeling off. When another man on the scene ran over and tried to remove one of Kirwan's shoes, his skin started to flay off. Later,
I should have put a warning on this.
Warning.
A bit late now.
Later, rangers found two large pieces of skin shaped like human hands next to the spring. With third-degree burns covering his entire body, emergency responders took Kerwin to the clinic at Old Faithful, where he was treated by a burn specialist who could do nothing at that point except numb the pain.
That's 100% burns.
Kerwin died at a Salt Lake City hospital the following morning.
Oh.
Moosey never made it out. His body was not recovered, though oils from his body caused small eruptions in the water in the day following. Now, Kerwin is one of more than 20 deaths that resulted from tourists either falling or willingly jumping into Yellowstone Hot Springs, as documented in the book Death in Yellowstone, Accidents and Foolhardiness in the First National Park, by attorney and longtime Yellowstone tour guide, park ranger and historian Lee H. Whittlesey.
That sounds like a fun read.
Yeah, I know. Whittlesey's books catalogues deaths and accidents brought on by reckless tourists in the park from its founding in 1872 to 2013. Along with drownings and scalding deaths, Whittlesey dug into the various types ways tourists in the park have died or were seriously injured as a result of their own foolhardiness. Turns out there are many ways to die in Yellowstone, including encounters with wild animals, exposure to noxious fumes, hypothermia, lightning strikes, being hit by falling trees, falls, drownings, accidental shootings, stove explosions, and murder.
Well, that sounds like a fun place to visit. It's going on my bucket list.
Because this information was not readily available from the park, Whittlesey gathered his data by poring over park superintendent records and local news reports.
Oh, good on him. But, but it's wilderness. It's people.
And it's huge. It's a huge park.
I think we just don't get it. We don't get how dangerous it is. I mean, we saw it in New Zealand, those bubbling hot pits of mud and stuff.
Yeah.
There's no way I'd walk in there.
Now, Whittlesey warned his readers that Yellowstone is not an amusement park full of tame animals and guardrails on the trails. It is a place full of hidden and obvious dangers, he said, which is why he felt compelled to share his cautionary tale while also capturing the park's colourful history. When asked by a reporter what scared him the most, Whittlesey said falling off a cliff or running into a bison. Comparatively speaking, a visitor is less likely to die in Yellowstone than in other national parks. According to a 2022 survey from Outforia, a nature and outdoor resource, the Grand Canyon is the most dangerous park with 134 documented deaths, according to records.
That's what they've got according to records. I'd say there's probably more than that.
Yeah,
I've seen it. It is beyond what the mind can actually comprehend. I would love for you to see it, Renata.
Okay.
It's breathtaking. We had to drive through herds of deer to get there. It was insane.
Wow. So Yellowstone is number 5 on a list of 52 out of a total of 4 million annual visitors. So the most common cause of death in Yellowstone, according to the survey of both natural and unnatural causes, is a tie at 12 apiece for motor vehicle crashes and heart attacks. The most common cause of death per the survey is a tie between falling and undetermined causes, resulting in 7 deaths each. Drowning has resulted in 5 known deaths in the park. And looking at all national parks, the survey indicated that falls were by far the most common way to die, accounting for a total of 245 deaths in all of the big parks, you know, in America. Now, Whittlesey discovered deaths by drowning or being boiled to death in one of the park's 10,000 springs, geysers, mud pots and steam vents, with temperatures reaching up to 205 degrees Fahrenheit, posed a far graver threat than being mauled by a wild animal. Yeah. The beautiful blue-green hues of the geysers, and spring seem to attract people to their edges, he found, with the earliest thermal injury dating back to 1871, when Truman Evets, a member of the 1870 Washburn expedition, decided to take a soak after being separated from his group and being lost for 37 days.
Ooh.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Wow.
Right.
That's a long time without a cup of coffee, Renata.
One of the worst reported incidents documented by Whittlesey's book involved four Chinese laundrymen who were thrown in the air and scalded to death after a geyser erupted one night. The author acknowledged the various holes in the story, which nonetheless was picked up by national media outlets.
Funny about that. If it's a good story, let's run with it. Who cares about the truth, hey?
Yes, the National Enquirer trumpeted the garish details with its title. Oh, get this.
Oh, no, please don't say they said four dim sum or something like that.
No, boiled Chinamen in the Yellowstone Park region. Featuring a large woodcut drawing of bodies, pigtails and wash tubs being spouted into the air. Those were different times,
they were.
Now, the most recent death was in 2016 when a 23-year-old man from Portland, Oregon, slipped and fell into a hot spring near Pork Chop Geyser, according to the
2021
article by Tom Arundale. And I think I actually saw a post come up when I was doing this research that someone just this last week had actually been burnt as well by a geyser. I don't think it was fatal. But this is happening all the time.
Look, I can understand if it was not a designated spot where something normally, you know, blows out of the ground and it catches you by surprise. But when they've got warnings and things around the place saying, dangerous, keep away, why do people have to risk it? I don't understand. It's not going to happen to them.
Yeah. I don't think they have, yeah, I really don't think they have a concept of what they're getting themselves into.
Because it's not in your basic language skills, what you've learned throughout life, so you can't probably comprehend exactly how dangerous it is.
Mm-hmm. Now, in 2013, Whittlesey counted 2 deaths from bison and 7 from bears. He also found that visitors seemed to be far more attracted to the 2,000-plus pound bison due to its status as a legendary symbol of the American West. Injuries caused by wild animals are far more common than deaths. An undated release from Yellowstone said that since 1979, 44 people have been injured by grizzly bears, with an average of 1 per year reported during the 1930s through to the 1950s. In other words, 1 out of 2.7 million visitors is at risk of being mauled.
1.7 million?
Yeah, 2.7 million.
2.7 million?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, the odds are in your favour, but there is still one person that it has to happen to.
Yep. The most recent death blamed on a grizzly bear occurred in August 2015 when a hiker was killed by an adult female grizzly bear near Elephant Back Loop Trail.
They're probably just protecting their cubs.
Yeah, absolutely. Between 1872 and 2015, 121 people died in drowning incidents, 21 from burns incurred after falling into hot springs and 26 by suicide. Oh, dear. Visitors nonetheless continued to take their chances approaching wild animals with many injuries documented over the years. The earliest death caused by bison was recorded in 1902, as reported in Whittlesey's book, and involved 49-year-old Dick Rock.
Hey, Dick.
Who was reportedly a well-known poacher in the area.
Oh, well, good. Good on the bison. Take him out, I say.
Yeah. Prior to 1990, bison injuries were fairly rampant in the park with about 46 non-fatal gorings reported between 1983 and 1994. Wow.
No, that's not that long ago.
No, they get too close.
Yeah.
One of the more memorable encounters recalled by the author included a 70-year-old man from New Jersey who was tossed 15 feet in the air by a bison before the animal ripped his leg open with its horn.
I now regret saying
every year there seems to be run-ins with a bison.
Every year there's another dickhead.
A 72-year-old California woman. Why do these old people go and do this?
Dementia.
Who in 2020 ignored the 25-yard safety barrier instead got within 10 feet of a bison.
Because they're special.
Oh, it's not.
The animals love them. They would never hurt them.
To take a picture before the animal gored her. For goodness sake, you silly, silly person. I'm so sorry for your family. In 2018, a California woman, 59, Kim Hancock, was gored by a bull bison crossing a boardwalk when she stepped closer to get a look. A second woman, another 72-year-old, Virginia Junk of Idaho, suffered minor injuries when she was butted in the thigh, pushed and tossed off a trail after accidentally getting too close to a bison.
How can you accidentally get too close if you're on some sort of trail that's roped off? Or something you said wasn't roped off, didn't you? I don't know. It seems suspicious to me. I think people are just overstepping what is safe.
So there are a coyote attacks or elk attacks as well. I'm not going to go into
elk.
That.
That's what I think it was we drove through.
Yeah.
Not into.
But murders in the park.
Oh, murders. Yep, okay.
More infamous are those that have been murdered in the park. According to Whittlesey's report, 8 people have been murdered in Yellowstone Park. At least 13 other murders have occurred on the nearby Montana towns of Cook, City, Gardner, Aldridge, Jardine and Hoare. That's H-O-R-R. The murder numbers do not include the dozens of people who get lost and perish, as well as those who specifically enter the park for the purpose of taking their own lives.
Oh, no, like Sea of Trees.
So the most gruesome murder was a murder in 1889 involving George Trishman, his wife Margaret, and their 4 children.
Oh, no.
Margaret, who was known to suffer from mental illness, slashed her own throat in an attempt to take her life. Later, Margaret tried to say that she had been assaulted by a large man, which didn't hold water with the authorities. In the end, she was committed to a mental hospital in Warm Springs, Montana. When she returned to the family home in Mammoth a few months later, Margaret slashed the throat of her youngest son, nearly severing his head from his body before chasing the other children with her hunting knife.
Oh, my God.
She was ultimately found to be clinically insane, jumping into the Yellowstone River from the train that was taking her to the hospital in Washington, D.C.
So does that mean she's still out there?
I dare say her body was never... her body was never found.
Yeah.
More recently is a brutal murder in 1970 of a Montana welfare worker just outside the park. 22-year-old James Michael Schlosser had the grave misfortune of picking up 2 hitchhikers outside the park.
Never pick up a hitchhiker. Haven't you seen those movies?
Unknown to Schlosser, the 2 men, Stanley Dean Maker and Henry Allen Stroop, were high on LSD. And Baker, who would later admit to cannibalism, Satanism, and other occult practices, referred to himself as Jesus.
Hang on.
Stroop appeared to just be along for the ride.
That list does not equate to being Jesus.
Well, he...
Eating people and worshipping Satan does not make you Jesus.
He covered all bases.
Oh, okay. You're just ticking every box in case, you know, if you go up or down, you can at least say, oh, well, look, I looked out for you.
So while Schlosser was asleep, Baker shot him in the head, then dragged his body to the river where he proceeded to cut it into six parts with his knife. He took care to cut off several of Schlosser's fingers and also beheaded the corpse, cutting into his heart and eating it.
Oh,
Lordy
warning,
people.
Warning, warning.
Oh.
We don't fear the bloody dead. It's these living people that are terrifying.
No, no. The two men then stole Schlosser's car, but were eventually nabbed by police in California after being involved in a hit-and-run accident. When apprehended by the highway patrol trooper, Baker reportedly told the officer, I have a problem. I'm a cannibal. Far out. When officers searched the men, they found the remains of finger bones in both their pockets.
Ew.
Oh. Now.
What would you, like, if you were the police officer that somebody's gone, officer, I need to let you know, I'm a cannibal.
Oh.
Would you be worried that they were hungry and waiting for a snack?
I don't know. But. In the end, Whittlesey says he's not trying to terrify anyone, but rather be realistic about the potential threats, which, of course, is part of what draws so many people to the park.
And losing a finger to the cannibal ghost.
That's part of the charm, the adventure, the fun, he said in the 2021 interview with the Yellowstone Reporter. In my opinion, if you cannot get killed and eaten by a wild animal, then you don't have a true wilderness area. Well, that is true.
So much fun to be had.
Mm.
Oh, fancy going camping in there. Wouldn't that be a hoot?
Yeah, no. No.
No.
No.
No.
Yeah, that's changed my mind over Yellowstone.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get on with the ghosties.
Oh, okay, some ghosties. Well, I was surprised just how many ghost stories were associated with this place, but after hearing your stories, Renata, I'm no longer surprised at all.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, I've got an interesting character which you'll all meet at some stage or other, but let's talk about some of the ghost stories associated not only with the park, but the old cabins and lodges and things that are around as well. I did find one thing that talked about some of the man-made things that could make people think there are ghosts there. There was one story that was saying that there is dragons lurking in the cave.
Yes.
At Yellowstone National Park. And that's around the canyon area. You can possibly even hear them sort of moving around in the cave at Mud Volcano. Now, the dragon there is actually a hot spring aptly known as Dragon's Mouth Spring, and you can hear the gases and the steam coming up from the ground and creating pressure bubbles that explode against the roof of the cave, which create a booming and a gurgling noise.
What a great story.
Which might sound like a dragon. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a great story. That'd be something that would be really cool to tell the kiddos, particularly if you're going to go camping. Now, there is another natural phenomena there where the ghosts appear in the mist. So there are ghostly formations in the park when the weather turns cold, but it's actually because of the hydrothermal steam that covers the trees nearby. Water droplets of the steam freeze, encasing the trees in a ghostly coat, which is known as rime ice. And it makes the trees look like they're ghosts, ghost trees. In the dead winter of Yellowstone's park, gets down to minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know what that is in Celsius. Mm. It's called bloody cold. There are also plants that can eat you.
Yes, carnivorous plants.
Carnivorous plants.
You'd need a big bloody plant to eat me.
Yeah, bladderworts. That's a fabulous name. A bladderwort. I think you can get a cream for that now. Maybe a prescription from the doctor for some antibiotics. And sundews have adaptations for catching prey such as water fleas and mosquito larvae. Nom, nom. Bladderworts have a trapdoor. that will catch their prey while sundews have red leaves that glisten with mucilage that attract unsuspecting insects. Mm. Imagine if they had a mutated one that grew big enough to eat one of us. That sounds like a musical, Little Shop of Horrors. Mm. Nah, we've already talked about the bubbling mud and all that sort of things. There's lots of ravens and bats in the air. You've got the earth shaking and thumping. You get eerie music over the Yellowstone Lake. Now, I thought that was an important one to mention because we've had some of the True Hauntings podcasts where there's been reports of music and there's normally a large body of water nearby. I particularly think of the Amityville one, and I had a listen to it. It didn't sound so much to music like me, but it could be a possibility. It's just a natural phenomena, a bit weird, but it creates a strange humming sound that sort of moves across the Yellowstone. There is an outtake for this, so the Pooh Bars will be getting an outtake. I stumbled within the first couple of seconds and cracked Renata up. Anyway, now we will... Oh, you've done the dog. There is a ghost of a Native American that haunts the lower falls of Yellowstone. So in 1870, a group of militiamen set out to explore the area for signs of gold. The men's pack horses were stolen by the local Native Americans. The militiamen pursued the thieves, and the chase ended up on water, with the horses swimming alongside. The Native Americans attempted to cross the river by raft, but were swept over the falls. And they say that you can still hear chanting while standing near the lower falls, or see the water turn red as if stained with blood.
Ooh.
There is a ghostly drowned man that appears on Stevenson Island. So the ghost story is from the 1920s when a concerned employee told his supervisor to go inspect the wrecked Seawater steamboat on Stevenson Island. Supposedly there were partygoers aboard on the night before, and the man encountered much more than floating beer bottles or hungover trespassers. A storm began to swell just as he came across a body in soaked clothing that resembled the fashions of an earlier century, so the 1800s. The man had no pulse, his eyes were bulging and his face was blue. However, as suddenly as the employee had come across the body, it vanished, as did the storm.
Oh, that's creepy.
That's weird. So we also have 77, let's say 70-year-olds. They're causing trouble, I tell you.
Stop taking 70-year-olds to big open wilderness parks.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to remember that.
Stop doing it.
So there was 77-year-old John F. Yancey met President Roosevelt during the dedication of the Roosevelt Arch in Gardner, MT, in 1903, but he caught a cold at the event and died of pneumonia soon after. Park employees claim that Yancey's ghost took up residence in Yellowstone's Roosevelt Lodge. And he can be a little bit of a nuisance. Sometimes you'll hear a tin cup that's banging on the walls of the employee quarters in the early hours of the morning. And you'll also have that jot, just one of those things where things will appear and disappear, or reports, as we like to call them. He's also notorious for unsaddling horses.
Oh.
Particularly if they're being ridden by pretty girls.
Oh.
Cheeky bugger.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, we have a siren, which makes Renata cough. Now, the siren is normally a female that sings a beautiful song to lure you off the path and into the water with them. So the first account of a man's death at the Norris Geyser Basin in 2016 surfaced online. Reddit users, it's on Reddit, it's got to be real, claim to have been a first responder at the scene, where the sister of the victim showed him a video of the incident. According to him, the man stood staring at the floating nude female figure with translucent skin. The figure was emitting a low hum. The man then fell into the water, lured by the siren. A man, Colin Scott, did die in the hot springs of November 2016, but there is the video of what happened mm-hmm. has never, ever been seen or released, mm. apart from the people who are claiming that
they saw it.
That they've seen it.
Yeah.
Now, there is a hotel or an inn there called the Old Faithful Inn, and apparently that has supernatural stuff happening as well. There is a story about... that's something that happened to one of the housekeepers. So they witnessed a fire extinguisher move as it did a 90-degree turn before dropping back into its initial hanging position on the wall. So a little bit of poltergeist activity.
Mm-hmm. But there's a couple of ghosties in there.
There is. We're getting on to that one now. This one. Oh, now, there is a couple that... I've got to find the correct one because I want to get in the right order. So there was a report of a woman staying at the Old Faithful Inn again. She saw a woman dressed in late 1800s attire floating at the foot of the bed during the night. That wouldn't put you off, would it? The story goes the next day, her husband showed the hotel's activities agent the claw marks on his shoulder... not from the ghost, but from his terrified wife, who was clinging on for dear life, going, what the?
Oh.
There is also a lead porter who is still working at the Lake Yellowstone Hotel in spirit, dressed in 1900s clothing, and they will sometimes appear and offer to help people who are having trouble getting their luggage to the second floor. Oh, Renata, we've got to go. How many times do we get put on those upper levels and we're trying to drag those bloody suitcases by ourselves?
All the time.
The ghost will appear for us. Surely.
Surely.
Two helpless females. he also provides tips on trails to explore Yellowstone.
Oh. Well,
you've got to love someone that's a helper.
Yeah. Now, I don't know whether I'd follow his tips, though.
Mm. This is the one that gets me. The Headless Bride.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the most notorious ghost. Begins in 1915 in New York when the teenage daughter of a wealthy shipping company owner rejected her arranged marriage. She had fallen in love with a much older man who worked in their house as a servant and wanted to marry him instead. Despite her father's attempts to talk her out of the union, the heiress married the servant. Heartbroken, her father offered the couple a significant dowry as a wedding gift on the condition... that they would leave New York forever. To his surprise, they agreed, and the pair travelled to Yellowstone for their honeymoon. Now, this is when things start to go awry. So they booked a room at the Old Faithful, and it didn't take long for the new bride to realise she may have had an oop-de-nana, bit of error of judgment. Her husband spent their dowry playing poker and eating and drinking in excess, and 1 month into their honeymoon trip, they ran out of money.
Oh, no.
So what did the bride do? She rang Dad and said, can I have more money? Now, look, all you people out there who have married or have moved out of home and are over a certain age, you got to earn the money for yourself. Stop asking your parents for money all the bloody time. Honest to God, grow up. Sorry.
That's a bit harsh.
Oh, no. I just saw something on TV the other day and I just thought, oh, my God, some people are entitled. And the father denied the request. One night, hotel staff allegedly heard the couple arguing loudly and the husband slammed the door and walked out, never to be seen again. Now, yeah, the staff thought, let's just leave the poor bride in peace. Obviously, things haven't gone well.
But they thought
they'd better go in and check on her to make sure that she was okay.
No.
So a poor unlucky housemaid found the bride in the bedroom, bloody and missing her head.
Oh, no.
Staff searched high and low, but her head wasn't located for days until it was discovered in the crow's nest where the band played.
Why would he put it there?
Yeah. Since then, guests have reported seeing the form in what appears to be a white dress descending the crow's nest with her head tucked under her arm. Now, let me introduce you to Leslie. And now, Yellowstone's interpretive specialist, Leslie Quinn. What the hell is an interpretive specialist? Can you enlighten me what that is?
Making sense of stories.
Okay. Now, Leslie says, a former bell captain of the Old Faithful Inn, George Borneman, was being hounded one day by a reporter who wanted to know about the inn's ghosts. After repeatedly telling him to his disbelief that the place had no ghost, he finally gave up a ghost story. He said, you know, all right, I'll tell you. I will tell you about the ghost since you need to know. It's the Headless Bride. And when he'd finished, the reporter said, so, you know, what year did that happen? And George responded, oh, say any year like. I just made it up.
Oh, no.
And the story has stuck. It stuck. I was doing research on this and the Headless Bride story keeps cropping up
everywhere.
Yep. This is what happens. It drives me batty. I like Leslie. Leslie said, many Yellowstone staffers claim the Old Faithful Snow Lodge is home to some spooky apparitions, but as Leslie points out, who is our interpretive specialist, the hotel was built in the 2000s, and what self-respecting ghost would want to hang around a brand new hotel?
Oh, Leslie's a fuddy-duddy.
Oh, Leslie's a party pooper.
She is.
She or he, yeah. I don't know.
Leslie.
They, them, whatever.
Get your act together.
Yeah. So that's the summary of my ghost stories. I have another long one, which I'll do as a special for our grand poo bars. I'd have a little one I can throw in here. This story, what's this one? I have another kind of awesome story for you. So when tourists do things like hit animals or animals die in public thoroughfares, usually, oh, they don't mention when they shoot them, usually the park service will load them onto a truck and take them to a place called the Boneyard.
Are they allowed to shoot them in the park?
Well, if they're about to attack someone. Remember we were in Romania and they had the guns to keep the bears away from people? It's basically a giant pile of dead animals, but employees of the park in the know are able to go and view this area where, after a carcass is dumped, animals will come and eat the remains. I lived in Canyon Village, about a 45-minute drive from the Boneyard. I don't know how this happens because you shouldn't be booking it through the park and bison are so slow-moving, but a tourist hit and killed a bison near our dorm. Instead of taking it to the Boneyard, they just dragged it way out into a field that our dorm overlooked. Just before dawn, while the ground was full of mist, bears and wolves would come and fight each other over the remains. Yellowstone made me fall more deeply in love with America than I ever had before. What the hell?
What?
How does that statement even... How does that even go together? You're watching it, these animals stalking and trying to kill each other to eat the carcass of something that's just been killed. Oh, I love America even more now. I don't understand. Yeah, so that was just a little interest story.
Thanks, Ed.
I'm here for you. And just one more quick one. This was posted by Secure Wonderland 7 years ago, and it's entitled The White Men in Yellowstone. Now, I'm going to be honest, I have not read through this yet. So let's see what it's like.
Oh, no.
I guess calling them men isn't really accurate, but honestly, I have no idea what else to call them. I work in Yellowstone National Park as a security guard, and so I am often outside late at night. I've seen a bunch of strange things. The strangest is these white men, as I've started to call them. Now, when I say they are white, I mean they glow in the dark.
What?
They glow in the dark, ghost white. The shortest one I've ever seen was at least 7 foot tall. It's not short. They usually are alone, but sometimes you can see a group of 3 or 4 of them. They walk on 2 very long legs and have equally long arms. Their bodies are very thin for their size, but what is really frightening is their faces. They have 2 large round eyes, kind of like owls, no nose, just 2 slits in their skin where a nose should be, and a large mouth with very thin lips. Sounds like an old teacher I used to have, a nun. They also have no hair. Yeah, that could be the nun that I have seen anywhere on them. The first time I saw them, I was walking home from... I was walking home from work. I think that's meant to be work, using an employee trail through the forest. I had walked that trail 100 times before, but on that night it felt different. It was just after 2 a.m. and I was at the trail where it crossed a road with my shining a flashlight down the street looking for cars and elk. When I shined it to the right, I could have sworn that I saw a white human-looking arm sticking out of the woods, but I figure it was my imagination after working a long day. Immediately after crossing the road, I saw it sitting on a log about 20 feet away from the left side of the boardwalk. It wasn't doing anything, just sitting there facing away from me, but I instantly felt uncomfortable looking at it and had the strongest desire to just run away as fast as I could. I managed to not run and just started walking down the path, keeping an eye on it till I couldn't see it anymore. As soon as I lost sight of it, though, I heard a soft walking behind me, and without seeing anything, I knew it was following me. So I walked as fast as I could without running, and the entire time I could hear the footsteps. When I got to the end of the path and was at the parking lot, I turned around and looked into the forest. That is when I truly saw it, because it was standing underneath a light on the path looking directly at me. I expected to charge and kill me, but honestly, all it did was stare at me, smiling. Ew. Then out of nowhere, it spoke and it said, "I see you." Oh, sorry, in a sing-song voice. "I see you." And then it ran into the forest laughing. Oh, that's creepy. That wasn't the last time I saw them, but I wish it was. Sometimes I can hear them outside my window laughing, and every time I do, I feel a primal fear of these things. I don't know what they are, but they are the strangest and most terrifying things I've ever seen. Oh, okay. So it'd be interesting to ask the Indigenous population what that may have been, if that's not a completely made-up story. Who knows?
Yeah.
That sounds brings like us to the end, though.
Elemental or something.
Now, I've got a theory on all of this. Mm-hmm. The park is massive.
Yeah.
There is many dangers in there.
Yep.
And people love to tell creepy stories, campfire stories.
Yep.
Do you think maybe that is influencing people on the spooky, creepy stuff that might be around? Or do you think this is truly haunted? I'm glad I get to ask that question, not you.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. There's probably some...
Oh, wise one.
There's probably some basis for some hauntings in there, but probably not as many as...
Well, there's been traumatic death, yeah, so... Yeah.
So, yeah, there's probably some spirits wandering around. That's as close as I'm going
to get. I would like to know from the Indigenous people what their... legends are in regards to the land. That would be really interesting.
Yeah.
But we've reached the end. Here we go. We've got to put our plug in now, our sales plug. We will have some extra content there for our poo bars. That's our Patreons. So if you want to get the extra stuff, you need to join the Grand Poo Bars. And I notice we've just had a new person join, Renata.
Yes.
We have. Just as we're recording this, somebody joined us. So thank you so much. $10 US a month, and you are helping us keep creating content and also traveling around to experience haunted locations and report back to you what we found. So join us on our YouTube channel, Anne and Renata Frightfully Good. If you just want to throw us a little thank you, you can always buy us a cup of coffee, buy me a coffee, Anne and Renata. And that's about it for now.
Yes.
Share us around. You know how it all goes. Everything helps. And we appreciate that you guys have listened right to the very end. So we'll see you next time. Be frightfully good.
Yep. See you on the dark side. Stay spooky. And
don't be a dickhead.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of True Hauntings. If you like the show, give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. For more on Anne and Renata, Follow at Ann and Renata on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Or visit their website, www.annandrenata.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.